And hello there, Peter Mansbridge here. You are just moments away from the latest episode of The Bridge. Who was our most consequential prime minister? It's your turn. You've got the answers coming right up. And hello there, Peter Mansbridge in Stratford, Ontario today. It's been quite the past week. A lot of remembrances of Brian Mulroney. Canada's 18th Prime Minister passed away last Thursday. State funeral will take place in Montreal later this month. So I imagine over the next few weeks there's going to be more remembrances of Brian Mulroney and his time in office and how Canadians have felt about him. So as a result, we've done a number of shows on the Mulroney legacy, but I suggested earlier this week that we throw out a question for you. You know, your turn. How do you feel about Canada's prime ministers? We've had 23. Who was the most consequential? Not necessarily the best, but the one who impacted the country most, you most. And you know what? This new format on questions has been interesting because there's been lots of involvement, and lots of involvement by people who haven't been involved before. And this week was no exception. In fact, I think we got more letters this week than we've had any week since we started this at the beginning of the year. And that's great. And a lot of them from first-time writers. And I'm going to focus on the first-time writers this week because we've got way more letters than we have room for. But we're going to try and get as many in. And to do that, it's best if I just shut up and start reading, right? So that's what I'm going to do. And it's actually kind of surprising that our first letter comes from someone who's not a Canadian. It's from Don Mazzella in Boston, Massachusetts. For me, says Dan, it's William Lyon Mackenzie King. King was significant in making Canada independent and pushed to make sure it was seen as a country in charge of its own destiny, as opposed to a colony of the British. He had a special relationship with President Franklin Roosevelt. The two were so close that FDR wished for King to be included in meetings to decide the fate of post-war Europe, but Churchill declined. That's it for me as an American listener and admirer of Canada. Well, thanks, Dan. It's great to hear from you. Alex Cianfloni from Ottawa. Jean Chrétien, hands down. He was a lifelong public servant, 10 years as prime minister in a turbulent time, post-Cold War and 9/11. Balanced the budget, 1995. Present in government for Pierre Trudeau's entire tenure. Two Quebec referendums, 1980 and 1995. Made the wise choice not to involve Canada in Iraq in 2002. Danny Spano in Innisfil, Ontario. That's on Lake Simcoe. It's about, 80 kilometers north of Toronto. I would choose Pierre Elliott Trudeau. He made Canadian politics interesting. As a Gen Xer and as a child of Italian immigrants, he was revered in our household. He was very charismatic and was bold, for example, giving the finger to protesters during the FLQ October crisis. He certainly lived up to the term Trudeau-mania. Megan Norris in Halifax. The best prime minister was Jean Chrétien. I was born in 1990, so Chrétien was PM for many of the formative years of my childhood, and he guided our country through some very challenging times. I recall after 9/11, when I was 11, he was steadfast, and I felt safe when I listened to him speak. I remember he set Canadians apart on the world stage. I recall traveling many places in my teenage years with relief and aid organizations, and the Canadian flag actually meant something. When traveling abroad, folks would tell me to wear my Canadian flag proudly because it meant peace. And to me, Jean Chrétien played a big role in sustaining that view. keep wearing your Canadian flag when you have the opportunity traveling around the world. You'll be surprised. People respect it a lot. Still. Ian Godsman in Calgary. When Lester Pearson served as Canada's Secretary of State for External Affairs from 48 to 57, he won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1957 for his role in resolving the Suez Crisis. His government introduced universal health care, the Canada Pension Plan, and the Maple Leaf Flag. He was a key figure in shaping Canada's modern identity and international reputation. Sean Aiken in Whitby, Ontario. I think Jean Chrétien was the most notable prime minister in my lifetime for four main reasons. He balanced the budget, recorded federal surpluses in ways not seen since the 1960s, and never again since. He defied the United States by not involving Canada in the Iraq War. He refined the art of self-defense involving soapstone carvings. Okay, a little background to that. It was November 95. A man with a knife made his way into 24 Sussex in the middle of the night. Aileen Chrétien called the RCMP, but it took them 9 minutes to arrive. And they're right outside the door. The man never made it past the locked bedroom door where the two Chrétiens hunkered down, but as they waited, Jean Chrétien grabbed an Inuit stone carving as protection, just in case. Back to the letter. Most notably, he invented a new way of greeting a complete stranger, the Shawinigan handshake. Background. In February 96, Chrétien was in Hull, Quebec, when an anti-poverty protester made it past security to Chrétien's side. Chrétien grabbed the man by the back of the neck and chin, forcing him to the ground, breaking one of his teeth. Chrétien later labeled it the Shawinigan handshake. Now, some people found that endearing, other people found it unacceptable. Bud Taylor from Richmond, Virginia writes, he's a Canadian, actually. I worked in the Treasury Board Secretariat in the late 1970s. For him, it's Pierre Trudeau, an intellectual, a classic liberal. He understood human rights and made this known when he was Justice Minister in the Pearson Cabinet, when he said there's no place for the state in the bedrooms of the nation. This had tremendous inclusion effect for gays and expanded into all parts of the private lives of Canadians. He was a pragmatic leader. Against his principles of human rights was his Just Watch Me implementation of the War Measures Act. This was against all his beliefs, but his job was to save the country. An integrated vision for Canada's founding nations, no more separate but equal. He passed the Official Languages Act that leveled the employment playing field in the federal government and forever changed how Canadians would relate to their government. Garth Wilson in Bowmanville, Ontario. That's just east of Toronto. Although leaders of different periods can only be judged within the period they lead, Mackenzie King has to be considered. A man that led our country through the Great Depression, the Second World War, and moved Canada from a junior member of the British Empire to a more robust and independent nation that grew into a bigger player internationally during his time. Although a very unusual, often described as an ingratiating eccentric, he was able to use his political guile to serve 21 years understanding the art of consensus building within the Canadian landscape formed by the two solitudes. National unity was always top of mind for King and played into many of his decisions both domestically and in foreign affairs. He once said himself, "The extreme man is always more or less dangerous, but nowhere so than in politics." In a country like ours, it is particularly true that the art of government is largely seeking to reconcile rather than exaggerate differences. Maybe the leaders that want to govern today could learn a few things from the past, after all. Ella Da Silva in Toronto. A lot of Toronto ones here. But Ella is from Toronto, but she's in Montreal, where she's in university. I think Pierre Trudeau has had the biggest impact on Canada by far. I could write on and on about all his impacts, which are so ingrained in Canada today, such as the Official Languages Act, multiculturalism, Petro-Canada, and also just generally as a more progressive country. Oh, and repatriating the Constitution. I think it's hard to deny that without the foundation Trudeau laid, future prime ministers would not have been able to accomplish all that they did. Even Trudeau's less successful moments have had a tremendous impact on our country. For example, I think the White Paper on Indigenous Affairs really allowed for the discourse around Indigenous peoples to change. Little background on that. In 1969, Prime Minister Trudeau and his Minister of Indian Affairs, Jean Chrétien, unveiled a policy paper that proposed ending the special legal relationship between Aboriginal peoples and the Canadian state and dismantling the Indian Act. It's fair to say Indigenous people hated the white paper. I recommend everyone read Trudeau's book, Towards a Just Society. My favorite essay, this is back to the letter, my favorite essay from it is about constitutional negotiations, but I think the whole book really convinces me of the good intentions behind Trudeau's policy, no matter if the results were less than ideal. Saeed Saden in Toronto. I believe what resonates best with me among all the accomplishments of different prime ministers of Canada is the efforts of John George Diefenbaker towards civil liberties and introducing the Canadian Bill of Rights. Elizabeth Onley Wiseman in Cobourg, Ontario, that's just east of Toronto. Lester Pearson should be remembered as the best Prime Minister of Canada. Under his leadership, his government introduced Medicare nationally. My brother contracted polio just months before a vaccine was discovered. Although Mom and Dad never complained, the crushing cost of braces, crutches, wheelchairs, and other expensive medical procedures put a tremendous financial and emotional strain on our family. Lester Pearson was a visionary who understood the importance of investing in universal health care and thus creating a better Canada for all. Bojan Pavlovich in Ottawa. I immigrated to Canada from the horror Yugoslavia in 1997, with my family, and my opinion is a reflection of my experiences in this amazing country for the past 20-plus years. It's my personal belief that Pierre Trudeau is the greatest Canadian PM. Trudeau's era as PM was transformative for Canada, fostering bilingualism through the Official Languages Act and enshrining civil liberties with the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. His leadership during the October crisis, marked by the decisive use of the War Measures Act, showcased his commitment to national security and bold governance. Nick Chambers in Oakville, Ontario. The answer for me is Jean Chrétien, and it's not close. Imagine reversing 30 years of budget deficits and running a $17 billion surplus in 2001. The Shawinigan Handshake, back-to-back majority governments. I think it was back-to-back-to-back, 93, 97, and 2000. It was a time in my life when I finished college, began my career, got married, bought a house, and started a family. That might also have something to do with my answer. John Smallgange in Bolton, Ontario. A short note about what South Africa was like before Brian Mulroney. Black people were not allowed to have an education. After Brian got involved, every citizen of South Africa can have a university education. This is what happens when one Canadian decides to make a difference. Steve Abba. Joe Hu, the best prime minister who never was. Due to his honesty and integrity, never got his chance. Joe Clark is Steve Abba's choice. The Joe Hu line, remember, it was in the Toronto Star. It was the headline the day after Clark won the PC leadership. He was PM for 273 days, the fourth shortest time in office of all PMs. But if you think that was short, here's a vote from Rhonda Mulligan in Sturgeon County, Alberta, just north of Edmonton, for a prime minister of 132 days. Although her tenure as Prime Minister of Canada was the third shortest on record, Kim Campbell, the 19th Prime Minister of Canada, has my vote. Kim was a trailblazer and set a standard previously unseen in Canadian politics by a woman. Among her many firsts, the first and only Prime Minister from BC. Well, that's not technically correct. She is indeed the only PM born in British Columbia. But in fact, John A. Macdonald represented the riding of Victoria in 1878, John Turner represented the riding of Vancouver Quadra. Campbell was the first baby boomer to hold the office. Ms. Campbell was also the first female justice minister, the first female minister of national defense, and the first woman to represent a member country at a NATO meeting. Because she was only prime minister for such a short time, it is easy to forget what she did for Canadian women simply by holding this office. There have been many great prime ministers, but to me, for that accomplishment alone, former Prime Minister of Canada Kim Campbell is the greatest. So Clark and Campbell, two short-term PMs, but we also got a couple of votes for people who were never Prime Minister of Canada. Ian Walker in St. John's, Newfoundland. The greatest Prime Minister was Sir Robert Bond. Bond was Prime Minister of Newfoundland until 1909, 40 years before Confederation. Bond had many achievements, but of special importance to me was one: economic diversification of Newfoundland. He successfully developed the pulp and paper industry, which still is an important part of the economy. Many leaders before and after him have tried to diversify the economy, but few with the success of Bond. Honesty to the electorate. Bond never made promises to the electorate he could not at least try to keep. I see those two achievements still incredibly relevant, and I find his legacy very impactful to me. There's a bit of history I did not know. And a second vote for a non-PM from Bill Ostrander, staying in Vancouver for several months, though living in Toronto. The best prime minister we never had was Robert Stanfield. He affected our country and me by his integrity and by his grace in defeat. All right, now back to people who were prime ministers of Canada. Derek Forsyth writes from Edmonton. For me, the answer's easy. Brian Mulroney was the best prime minister of Canada. Full stop. As a young person fresh out of university, I worked for members of parliament in the Mulroney government, most of them from the Maritimes. Got to see his leadership with his caucus from a different perspective. He was, in my view anyway, the last of the great statesmen in Canadian politics who had the focus and the gravitas to take on big issues and bring the country, kicking and screaming sometimes, to what was a better place economically, socially, and politically. I often found it funny that people would say that in the House or in formal speeches, statements, he would use $25 words when 10-cent ones would do. But I also got to see him work rooms from small to large, and he had the ability to hold everyone's attention and connect them in ways I have not seen since. I enjoyed hearing Brian Mulroney speak to issues of the day in his time after he left office, and will miss his wisdom and perspective. He was truly a great Canadian. Gary Burchett in Wilno, Ontario. That's south of Pembroke, about 45 minutes east of Algonquin Park. Although there were many profound prime ministers of Canada, one that stands out the most for me was Lester Pearson. He was the one who finally introduced Medicare to the country. I'm going to thank Tommy Douglas for that. Karen Stothers, or Stothers, from Toronto. I'm a student of history, but you have asked a difficult question. My research reminded me of many things about the different prime ministers. Most did some great things, but also not great. Weighting the good with the bad was too difficult for a simple person like me. So I went to what I know, and my answer, Pierre Trudeau, for the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, that I believe is essential for us as a democracy, even with the use of the notwithstanding clause. As a university student in 1982, I remember very well its finalization. Martin Partridge in Peterborough County in Ontario. On a Saturday in 1982, I came across hundreds of students crammed around a TV set in the downstairs pub at Osgoode Hall Law School. The Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms was being launched by the signature of Queen Elizabeth II. That pivotal and crucial document makes Pierre Elliott Trudeau the most important Canadian Prime Minister for me. I was there that day on Parliament Hill in Ottawa covering that with the great Barbara Frum. The two of us were in the anchor booth that day. It was definitely Canadian history, no matter how you feel about it. TC Sang of Vancouver. The answer to this week's question is Lester Pearson. As foreign minister, he won the Nobel Peace Prize for peacekeeping. As prime minister, he got us universal health care nationally and the Maple Leaf flag. Things we take pride in as Canadians today. What else do I need to say? James Profiti in Toronto. I'd have to say Mackenzie King was probably the most impactful because he was instrumental in so many changes for such a long stretch of Canada's history, from about 1910 to 1950. He played a major role in closing many of the foundational questions regarding what Canada is and who Canadians are, and also had policies and oversaw events that helped create Canadian society as we know it today. King was the longest-serving PM at 21 and a half years. He led the country through parts of the Depression, World War II, and was our voice at the table as the dust settled in 45. In addition to these major achievements, he was also a champion for increased autonomy for Canada and for the other dominions of the then British Empire. This led to major constitutional reforms in the 1926 Balfour Declaration and the 1931 Statute of Westminster, which functionally gave us the relationship with Britain and with the Crown that we have today. Some other major achievements from his governments included founding TransCanada Airlines, Air Canada, formation of employment insurance, old age security, and an early welfare system, creation of Canadian citizenship in 1947, negotiations with Newfoundland to join Confederation, and early federal housing initiatives. King was not without his faults, and these include truly regrettable and racist policies such as restrictions on Chinese immigration and our internment of Japanese Canadians in World War II, as well as a fascination with Hitler and the Nazis before the war. Despite these, I think if the question is impact, there are few PMs who can hold a candle to King. Nick Ridpath of London, Ontario. I'm 46, so for me growing up, the major hallmarks of foreign affairs included the Gulf War era, 9/11, and the Iraq weapons of mass destruction debacle. The strongest decision I've ever seen a PM make was Chrétien, defying the American influence to not send our military into Iraq in the wake of the American obsession with Saddam Hussein. I always wanted to thank Mr. Chrétien for that powerful move. I finally got my chance in 2018 in Toronto by pure chance, bumping into him in the lobby of the Royal York. That's the big old railway hotel in Toronto. I said, "Mr. Chrétien, I just wanted to thank you." And he cut me off, and in his perfect Shawinigan accent said, "For keeping us out of Iraq, you're very welcome." Unreal. Lawrence Rainey in Muskoka, Ontario. The Prime Minister who has had the most impact on our society is undoubtedly Pierre Trudeau. In his over 15 years in power, from 1968 through 1984, aside from the eight-month Joe Clark period, he solidified an officially bilingual, multicultural nation, worked to strengthen Canada vis-a-vis the United States, standing up to right-wing U.S. presidents like Nixon and Reagan, and made us a fully independent nation by repatriating our Constitution from Britain and instituting our Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Furthermore, he fathered, raised, and mentored another Prime Minister, Trudeau, who's led Canada for almost another decade in our century, not to mention that one of his top lieutenants, Jean Chrétien, was also PM for over a decade. So his influence has spanned over half a century, even extending back to when he declared as Justice Minister in 1967 that the state has no place in the bedrooms of the nation, at a time when many places still criminalize gay people and other intimate acts. His impact on the Canada of today is immense and undeniable. Matthew Skalarczyk in Vernon, British Columbia. I tip my hat to Robert Borden, best known for his leadership during the First World War, which arguably is the conflict where Canada cemented its identity on the world stage. Due to Canada's sacrifice, he insisted, against opposition, that we have a seat at the table of the Paris Peace Conference, which resulted in the Treaty of Versailles, which Canada signed independently, and a seat in the League of Nations. During the war, Borden passed the War Measures Act, the Income Tax Act, and the Wartime Elections Act, which gave women the right to vote. He established the Canadian National Railway and is the last Canadian Prime Minister to be knighted. Many Prime Ministers are more fondly remembered, but when I think of the ripple effect, it's hard to think of any of Robert Borden's contributions that are not still felt today, more than a century after he left office. Matthew Clifford of Cambridge, Ontario. It's going to be the last one before we take our break. Lots more letters still to come, though. But Matthew in Cambridge writes, "It's generally held that the team which acquires the best player in a trade has in fact won the trade. And so too it must be that the Prime Minister during whose watch the country was able to weather its greatest storm must receive serious consideration for the title as Canada's best Prime Minister. It was during William Lyon Mackenzie King's tenure from much of the early 1920s to the late 1940s that Canada was fundamentally transformed from a rural agricultural nation to a modern urban industrialized one. King's implementation of the Unemployment Insurance Act in 1940, his wholesale reworking of the division of powers and responsibilities between the federal and provincial governments as a result of his Royal Commission on Dominion-Provincial Relations, and his implementation of the Family Allowance Act, all served to provide the necessary social policy structures, providing a social safety net all Canadians can rely upon in their inevitable time of need. He also helped to undergird the Allied war effort, especially during the early dark days of the Second World War." Good letters. There's lots more to come. And there's the random ranter on a very personal topic for him today. That's still to come. But right now, it's time for our break. And welcome back. You're listening to The Bridge, the Thursday episode of Your Turn. Your thoughts on Canada's most consequential prime minister during a period where we're thinking prime ministers as a result of the passing of our 18th prime minister, Brian Mulroney. You're listening on Sirius XM, Channel 167, Canada Talks, or on your favorite podcast platform. I'm Peter Mansbridge in Stratford, Ontario. And back to your letters. Kay Teschke in Vancouver. Lester Pearson. He chose great people to work with, including Tommy Douglas and top cabinet ministers from Quebec. The result was that between 1963 and 68, his government brought in Medicare, the Canada Pension Plan, our flag, legalization of contraception, abortion, and homosexuality, simpler divorce laws, points-based immigration, and the Auto Pact. They held royal commissions that resulted in the equality of women before the law and official bilingualism. They declined to join the U.S. in the Vietnam War. Wow. That's from Kay Teschke in Vancouver. Ron Snyder in Edmonton. "I shook John Diefenbaker's hand when he came to Red Deer when I was in grade 10 or so, the year of the 1962 federal election. Bob Thompson of Red Deer was the social credit leader at the time. This is why Deef the Chief showed up. There was some sort of candidates debate event at the Red Deer Memorial Center, and my good friend Leo had got me to support him in his protest of Bob Thompson attending the event. My friend Leo had somehow obtained good-sized Bob Thompson campaign posters and given Bob a Hitler mustache, and perhaps added a Nazi flag. We were at the back of the hall holding them up, or at least Leo was holding his up high. I was not as political and had basically attended to show support for my friend Leo. I believe we were chastised for holding up the Hitler posters and did lower them fairly quickly. I think even Leo realized they were a bit over the line. After the debate, we were greeted by the friendly NDP candidate. Can't remember his name. The crowd thinned out, and somehow we were being introduced to the Prime Minister, who graciously shook our hands. Frank Wong in Surrey, BC. To me, the most influential PM to this nation has to be William Lyon Mackenzie King. During his reign, many events and policies transitioned Canada from being treated as a British subordinate to a fully independent nation. There was the King-Byng crisis. Okay, history. A bit much to explain, but in a nutshell, in 1925, King asked Governor General Lord Julian Byng to dissolve Parliament, call a new election. Byng refused and said the Conservatives were asked to form government, which they did for 8 months. King then won the next election. Since then, no Governor General has publicly refused the advice of a Prime Minister. Keyword there is publicly. The founding of the UN and our independent declaration of war against the Axis powers, just to name a few things that King did. During King's era, there were also important social safety net mechanisms being put in place, such as the beginning of the old age pension and unemployment insurance programs. Lastly, his administration also oversaw the creation of the CBC and the National Film Board, both of which have made massive impacts on Canadian culture. Peter Webb in Kingston. When I think of impactful prime ministers, William Lyon Mackenzie King always springs to mind, in part because of the King-Byng affair, we just mentioned that, that effectively ended the Governor General's ability to act on their own. Since then, the Governor General has been more or less subordinate to the Prime Minister, and that seems to be worth remembering. And most impactful Prime Minister does not necessarily mean... And most impactful Prime Minister does not necessarily mean best Prime Minister. Gotcha. Sandra Thomas in Peterborough, Ontario. I don't know that I want to declare that R.B. Bennett, who has actually started the CBC with the, there was a different term, and then it was finessed by King. Anyway, Sandra writes, I don't know that I want to declare that R.B. Bennett was the best prime minister, but a biography I recently read of him by John Boyko was fascinating. Coming into office in the worst of the Great Depression couldn't have been easy. Yet he went on to create a lot of Canadian icons. His notable achievements included minimum wage and limits on work hours, fair trade and anti-monopoly legislation, the creation of the Canadian Wheat Board, the Bank of Canada, the Canadian Radio Broadcasting Corporation. And he was a conservative prime minister. I wish our current politicians had required reading. David Oliver in Oak Bay, BC. William Lyon Mackenzie King has to be high up on the list, not only because of his role in mobilizing Canada to play a crucial role during the Second World War in all kinds of ways, including the not-so-glamorous one of finance. He also laid the foundations of the welfare state, made many reforms, including significant constitutional changes, and through his role in the process leading to the Statute of Westminster, established Canada as an independent middle power in foreign affairs. He was a flawed, strange, and complex man, not particularly likable, and he had ideas and attitudes we would find objectionable. However, he used his time in office to advance the living standards of Canadians, establish the country's international reputation, and more than any other, made Canada what it is today. Nancy Kumpf in Sarnia, Ontario. I believe I was 17, and it was the early 70s, Trudeau mania had swept the nation. Everything was very exciting. You could feel the mood of the country transforming. A friend asked me if I would be interested in working on a campaign to re-elect our local Liberal MP. His name was Bud Cullen. So I joined our Young Liberal Association. After a successful campaign, Mr. Cullen was re-elected, and we were rewarded with a trip to Ottawa, where we met Pierre Trudeau and many prominent ministers. I've stayed active over the years in our Liberal Association and worked on different campaigns. I'll never forget the effect that campaign had on me because it really changed my life. You know, and you'll hear that from people who've worked on campaigns with all parties. at different points in their life and how it changed their lives. Bud Cullen, by the way, I remember Bud Cullen. He became a minister. He was Minister of Immigration at one point. Glenn McLaughlin in Regina. Lester Pearson. Looking at the record, the governments between 49 and 68, Saint-Laurent, Diefenbaker, and Pearson were quite remarkable. During these years, a number of things were introduced that we now take for granted. Saint-Laurent involvement in NATO, RRSPs, Trans-Canada Highway, the St. Lawrence Seaway, and the Trans-Canada Pipeline. Diefenbaker, the first female cabinet minister, Ellen Fairclough. She signed my citizenship papers when I became a Canadian in 1959. She was the Minister of Citizenship. The vote for First Nations and Inuit in opposition to South African apartheid. Pearson, Canada Student Loan Program, Canada Pension Plan, and Universal Health Care. Pearson also kept us out of Vietnam. Saint-Laurent and Diefenbaker both took big swings on public works and on rights, respectively. However, they were similar to efforts in the USA at roughly the same time. For instance, Eisenhower brought in large public works projects, such as the Interstate Highway System. Eisenhower and later Johnson both put forward various civil rights legislation. Like his predecessors, Pearson was taking a big swing by bringing in universal health care. Unlike his predecessors, the Universal Health Care Initiative did not have a corresponding initiative in the U.S. Thus, it is one of the things that differentiates Canada from the U.S. It's for this reason that I believe Pearson was one of the most consequential prime ministers. Raj Krishnan, who forgot to tell us where he was writing from. Pierre Trudeau, he opened up immigration and created the multiculturalism in Canada, especially in urban settings that we see today. His son Justin was born the day my mom arrived in Canada. Barb Dawson in Dresden, Ontario. Sort of halfway between London and Windsor. This week's task proved to be more difficult than I initially thought it would be. I changed my mind many times while I refreshed my memory on what each of the prime ministers did or did not accomplish during their terms. What complicated it all was that some served during good times while others served during difficult times, which certainly affected the agendas and outcomes of policies that they enacted during their terms. Each one is known for many things that helped us form this great country of ours. However, one PM that I always appreciated for his no-nonsense demeanor and his courage to speak his mind, leaving no doubt where he stood on issues, Jean Chrétien. He spoke without using spin doctor speeches and did not sugarcoat anything. He made many popular and very unpopular decisions, regardless of the fallout. He was well respected by many foreign leaders and managed to bring Quebec and the rest of Canada closer together as well. During his tenure, there were many things enacted, both positive and negative, and most of those are still in operation today. In doing so, he eliminated a 30-year budget deficit without triggering a recession, and that, in my mind, made him rise high up in the ranking and finalized Mr. Chrétien as my choice. Adrian Deschamps, the Prime Minister of Canada with the most impact on Canada, has to be Sir John A. Macdonald. Macdonald essentially created the country and saw the creation of a transcontinental railway. Macdonald was so influential that the actions of the next five prime ministers mostly consisted of things Macdonald had already started. Macdonald's influence is still felt today, both through the country he founded and the debates around his legacy and name. Richard Sainer. Brian Mulroney. Up to and including his tenure as PM, I had always voted PC following my parents' voting habits. He made a lot of sense to me and his platform. His influence on me continues to this day, as I have never voted for any of the parties that followed destroying the Progressive Conservatives. Sad, for true, but true. Just a couple left here. Sandy Esposito in Aurora, Ontario. I think Lester Pearson was the best prime minister. I remember when his government brought in the new flag. It was a gentle way of starting to break away from the mothership. As a young person backpacking through Europe about 14 years later, I proudly had the flag on my backpack It was an introduction that I was a Canadian without having to say a word. Andrew Cadell in Kamouraska, Quebec. So sure of the St. Lawrence, about 2 hours northeast of Quebec City. Lester Pearson was a giant despite being short in stature with a pronounced lisp, and yet he won the Nobel Peace Prize and rose to the highest office in the country. There are his many accomplishments. In 5 short years, including Medicare, the Canada Pension Plan, the flag, his sensitivity to Quebec, but he was also a veteran, a scholar, an athlete, and a senior diplomat who served in London and Washington during wartime and served at the creation of the UN and NATO. As a writer, he was unparalleled. His autobiography, Mike, still stands up. At the Department of Foreign Affairs, where I worked, he scored the highest recorded mark on the Foreign Service exam when he joined in 1928. When visitors came to the Pearson Building, I would take them to see his Nobel Prize and the exhibit on his life. On a personal note, I've met most of the prime ministers of the past 60 years, except Pearson. He was scheduled to speak on the creation of the UN at my University of Ottawa International Relations class in 1972. Sadly, he died that Christmas. I had so many questions that I never got to ask. Shannon Bradley Green in Cochrane, Alberta. I find myself with a dead heat tie between Brian Mulroney and Pierre Elliott Trudeau. After listening to Dr. Janice Stein's opinion, I would agree with her that Brian Mulroney was the greatest foreign policy prime minister since Lester Pearson and did the most to advance Canada economically into the North American and global economy. However, and you may find this surprising due to my location, I feel Pierre Elliott Trudeau is equally deserving of the win due to his work in Canada, making it a more multicultural country, and his establishment of a new Canadian constitution with a charter of rights and freedoms. High praise from a Westerner. So to recap our unscientific survey, we had votes for 12 of our 23 prime ministers in total, of all the letters written, some of which you've heard today. William Lyon Mackenzie King came third. There was a tie for first between Lester Bowles Pearson and Pierre Elliott Trudeau. We'll give you the winning letter, or the letter at least that touched me the most, and we'll receive a signed copy of one of my books in the days ahead. But first it is time for the Random Ranter. And as I hinted earlier, the Random Ranter today is quite personal. His concerns are ones I think that are shared by many people during their lives. They'll recognize this moment. And if you don't recognize it, the odds are you're going to as you get older. So here we go. Here's the Random Ranter for this week.
Today I want to talk about something that's been hitting close to home for me this week, aging in place. Specifically, the lessons I've learned about how not to do it for my 90-year-old dad. Now my dad lives alone, at the lake, in the cottage he built with my mom. And with her passing, the last decade has been tough for him. His plan was always to die first. And honestly, the Vegas odds would have been good on that, because he's had a hard life of hard work, hard drinking, and hard-headedness. And while he doesn't drink or work anymore, he remains as stubborn as ever. Like many men his age, my dad has never had much of an emotional spectrum. He's either happy or angry. And lately, it's been pretty much just angry. Now, to a point, I can empathize. I mean, he's lost his license. Most of his friends have passed, he's got health issues, and he's gone blind. But this week, his neighbors called to tell me that he's starting to fall down, and I'm really at my wit's end on what to do about it, because broaching the subject with him did not go over at all. He's committed to aging in place, no matter how impractical that has now become. So that's what's got me on the topic. I'm frustrated at his choice, but I have to respect it because while he's suffering from horrible judgment, he is still of sound mind. Now, in fairness to him, there's not a lot of options outside of aging in place. I mean, if you don't mind a waiting list or all the horror stories that emerged during COVID, then a care home could be an option. Assisted living facilities are more agreeable for some, but to many like my dad, they're still a non-starter. Most people want to stay in their homes, which is good because, as is, our care home and assisted living infrastructure is struggling to keep up with demand. I mean, it's a good problem. It means folks are living longer than they ever have. But the downside to it is that we're woefully unprepared. We lack the healthcare capacity, home care services are inadequate, and the situation is only set to escalate because here come the boomers with their yet longer life expectancies and yet higher rates of dementia. It's a demographic time bomb, and it's too late to do much about it. So it's going to be up to individuals and families to plan accordingly. So what have I learned from my dad? Well, first off, I've learned that plans can go awry and you can't afford to be married to them. You need to be flexible. What you think is your worst case scenario could end up being your best. I've also learned that attitude is everything. Being angry isn't just pointless. It's counterproductive. It sucks the goodwill out of people. And when you get older, you need goodwill. Because while independence is great, that's really not the way old age works. You need help. All the thriving seniors I know aren't afraid to ask for it. They live in the moment. They're not afraid to admit when they can't do something. And they have no trouble finding people happy to help them. But that's not my dad. And it's not a lot of people. I mean, how many people do you know that are hard of hearing who won't get a hearing aid? How many people need but won't get a medical alert system in case they fall? How many people need but refuse to get home care? It's a lot. And the sad thing is that those are all things designed to help keep people safe and in their homes. Which brings me back to my very stubborn, very angry father. How does his story end? I don't know. But I'm not guessing well. Every time I call him and he doesn't answer, I imagine it's because he's lying prone on his bathroom floor, alone, with no one to help him up and no one to hear his cries. And for all his pride and independence, that's not a good way to go.
Oy, that was tough. You know, the renter called me the other day and said he was having a difficult week. He was really busy with his real job, and he had this issue at home, or at least at his dad's home. And he was wondering if he'd take the week off. And I said, listen, I totally understand that if that's what you need to do. But you could also maybe write about your situation, because the situation you're going through is a situation that a lot of people go through and are trying to deal with. And maybe talking about it will help not only you, but will help them. And so that's what we ended up with. And I greatly appreciate his clarity in talking about it. Okay, back to the day's topic. And I also thank you, because I know so many of you write in, talk about the renter, and you either agree with him or disagree with him, but you love the opportunity of speaking out about whatever the issue is that he brings up, and that it's separate from all the other issues that we talk about during your turn. All right, here's the letter that I found that impacted me the most, okay? Doesn't mean I agree with the choice of who is the most consequential prime minister, but I love the letter. and it came from Andrew Cadell in Kamouraska, Quebec. Lester Pearson was a giant despite being short in stature with a pronounced lisp, and yet he won the Nobel Peace Prize and rose to the highest office in the country. There are his many accomplishments in 5 short years, including Medicare, Canada Pension Plan, the flag, his sensitivity to Quebec. But he was also a veteran, a scholar, an athlete, and a senior diplomat who served in London and Washington during wartime and served at the creation of the UN and NATO. As a writer, he was unparalleled. His autobiography, Mike, still stands up. At the Department of Foreign Affairs, where I worked, he scored the highest recorded mark on the Foreign Service exam when he joined in 1928. When visitors came to the Pearson Building, I'd take them to see his Nobel Prize and the exhibit on his life. On a personal note, I've met most of the prime ministers of the past 60 years except Pearson. He was scheduled to speak on the creation of the UN at my University of Ottawa International Relations class in 1972. Sadly, he died that Christmas. I had so many questions, never asked. Thank you for that, Andrew. Send me your email me with your postal address and I'll get you a signed copy of one of my books. Right out to you. It's to Kamouraska, Quebec, south shore of the St. Lawrence, about 2 hours northeast of Quebec City. All right, that's going to wrap it up for today. Tomorrow, it's your, it's not your turn. Tomorrow, it's Good Talk with Susan Delacorte filling in for Chantal Aubert, who is away on holidays, and Bruce Anderson. The three of us will talk about whatever we talk about. You know, there's always something to talk about on Good Talk, and we look forward to it, and hopefully you do as well. I'm Peter Mansbridge. Thanks so much for listening on this day. Talk to you again in 24 hours.